Well, thank you all for being here. I have prepared a not too frightening amount of remarks. And I'd like to start by welcoming a special segment of the audience, both here and when it's on the radio, that is not often acknowledged. The surveillance listeners and infiltrators joining us tonight, thank you. I want to include you in this discussion because tomorrow, if your supervisor instructed you to hand in your ID and badge and to surrender your weapon, I know what the first thing you'd say. I'm entitled to a reading of the charges against me. Ironically, that is exactly what the detainees would also like to say for the last 6 years. I'm entitled to a reading of the charges against me. The First Amendment reads, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances." The due process of grievances can be traced directly to Magna Carta, originally issued in 1215. And in fairness, I feel that I should, in fact, concede here that the date of 1215 is clearly pre-9/11. So, Magna Carta is one of the most important legal documents in the history of democracy, as it is the antecedent to our United States Constitution, as well as the Bill of Rights and the rule of constitutional law today. Magna Carta required the king to respect certain legal procedures and to accept that his will could be bound by law. The king is not above the law. Magna Carta explicitly protects certain rights of the king's subjects, whether free or fettered, most notably the right of habeas corpus, meaning that people had rights against unlawful imprisonment. Habeas corpus ad subjectium is Latin for "you may have the body subject to examination." It is a writ which requires a person detained by authorities be brought before a court of law so that the legality of the detention may be examined. Its original use was straightforward, a writ to bring a prisoner into court to testify in a pending trial. Magna Carta states in Article 39, "No free man shall be taken or imprisoned or exiled or in any way destroyed, nor will we go in upon him, nor will we send upon him, except upon the lawful judgment of his peers or the law of the land." Yeah, back in 1215, they could still write a sentence. But what began as a weapon for the kings and the courts became, as the political climate changed, protection for the individual against arbitrary detention by the state. Habeas corpus is issued by a judge and can be demanded by anyone who believes they are unlawfully detained. It does not determine guilt or innocence, merely whether the person is legally imprisoned. Habeas corpus represents the fundamental principle that unlawful detention can be challenged by immediate access to a judge, even by a telephone in the middle of the night. Military Commissions Act of 2006 struck down almost 800 years of law based on these pillars. It simply removes a suspect's right to challenge his detention in court, as it also expands the definition of an unlawful enemy combatant to cover anyone who has purposefully and materially supported hostilities against the United States. Quick, define purposefully and materially. Could you be defined as an enemy combatant? One person has already been charged under these new terms with aiding terrorists because he sold a satellite TV package that included the Hezbollah network. Is this important? During the days of British rule on these shores, there was a colonial declaration indicating that back then, depriving even us lowly colonists of trial by jury was considered sufficient cause to start a war of independence based on the then fashionable idea that liberty was an inalienable right. Robert Bolt's screenplay of A Man for All Seasons reminds us that if a right can be impinged for some members of a society, then no member of society can be secure in their full rights. And he eloquently summarizes the necessity of rule of law. I will now play both parts. William Roper. So now you would give the devil the benefit of law? Sir Thomas More. Yes. What would you do? Cut a great road through the law to get after the devil? Roper. Yes, I'd cut down every law in England to do that. Thomas More. Oh, and when the last law was down and the devil turned round on you, where would you hide, Roper, all the laws being flat? This country is planted thick with laws from coast to coast, man's laws, not God, and if you cut them down, and you're just the man to do it, do you really think you could stand upright in the winds that would blow then? Yes, I'd give the devil the benefit of law for my own safety's sake. So if we do, in fact, regard the personhood and full humanity of these people who are detained as equal to our own, equal to our sons, brothers, and husbands, then how can we rest until their full rights are secured? Is anything less, any less action, a kind of Stockholm syndrome on our part? Knowing full well the information gained by threats, by force, by sleep deprivation, and by torture is neither reliable nor actionable. The question must then be asked, what is the object of torture? Who benefits when a culture of imprisonment is sanctioned? Some of these poems were first written by incising letters and characters into styrofoam cups, which guards then seized and destroyed. These cup poems have been reconstructed from memory, and I believe Lucy will be reading at least two of them tonight. I can't help thinking of Nelson Mandela's autobiography, Long Walk to Freedom, which he wrote. It began as scraps of paper buried under the floor of his prison cell where he was incarcerated in South Africa for more than 25 years. We don't have that kind of time now to restore the terribly eroded and endangered rule of law here. But hearing these voices and bearing witness here tonight is a step. We have to take many steps now, quickly and with great persistence and in solidarity, to again secure full human rights and to restore and rehumanize our very lives. Thank you.
The first reader of Guantanamo detainees' poetry is writer and activist Lucy Lepard.
For these people who are listening in, you can also note that I'm wearing a shirt that you're not allowed to get on airplanes with. Okay, anyway. Well, I'm immensely proud to be here and also proud to have been for a couple of terms on the board of the Center for Constitutional Rights in the 80s. They are one of the major organizations that are keeping us from the brink of complete disaster along these lines that Nancy was talking about. Also, these prisoners, I realized, are jihadists in one sense. I know people don't think that they should be called jihadists, and it's been misinterpreted, but my understanding is that the jihad means the struggle to be with God. And one way of doing this is to write poetry. And language, of course, in Sunni Islam is the art, because representation isn't allowed or is prohibited. I wanted to read something from the introduction here, the text by Flag Miller about what activism is. The poet whose name I'm afraid I really can't pronounce, it's Qutb, Qutb. The poet, Qutb wrote, is no mere philosopher, but is rather an activist who plunges into life, sensing its sensations, conscious of its consciousness, interacting with it, and then speaking about what he senses from it. Or what else about what life wants to say about itself? Or else about what life wants to say about itself. I like that. Let's see. Ron assigned us these poems. There was one patch I really wanted to read from the introduction, what these people were up against. And the poetry is translated very hastily, I gathered, and in some cases the translators are not listed, so I won't be saying who the translators are. They're listed, but you don't know which poems they did. But it says, the obstacles that these men have faced in composing their poems are profound. In the first year of their detention, many of the detainees were not allowed regular use of pen and paper. Undeterred, some would draft short poems on styrofoam cups they had retrieved from their lunch and dinner trays. Lacking writing instruments, they would inscribe their words with pebbles or trace out letters with small dabs of toothpaste, then pass the cup poems from cell to cell. The cups would inevitably be collected with the day's trash, the poetic inscriptions consigned to the bottom of a rubbish bin. Two of these poems by Sheikh Abdurrahim Muslim Dost, a Pakistani poet who was released from Guantanamo in April 2005, were reconstructed from memory and are included in this selection. And I think I will read them first, and then his other poem after I read the introduction. The cup poems, cup poem one. What kind of spring is this, where there are no flowers, and the air is filled with a miserable smell? Cup poem two. Handcuffs befit brave young men. Bangles are for spinsters or pretty young ladies. The bio of Sheikh Abdurrahim Muslim Dost. He's a Pakistani poet and essayist who spent nearly 3 years in Guantanamo with his brother, Ustad Badrussaman Badr. Dost was a respected religious scholar, poet, and journalist, and author of nearly 20 books before his arrest in 2001. While at Guantanamo, he composed thousands of lines of poetry in Pashto, most of which were retained by the U.S. military after his release in April 2005. You know, they were real poetry connoisseurs over there. In October 2006, shortly after Dost and his brother published a memoir of their Guantanamo detention, Dost was again arrested by Pakistani intelligence. He has not been heard from since. And this is his other poem, They Cannot Help. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful, a poem written in Camp Delta, Guantanamo, Cuba. Those who are charitable cannot help but sacrifice for others. They cannot help but face danger if they wish to remain true. When they face injustice, dishonesty, and inequity, they cannot help but be under the power of the traitors and the notorious. Consider what might compel a man to kill himself or another. Does oppression not demand some reaction against the oppressor? It is natural that a man is driven to invention and to creation in times of duress. The evildoer will be punished. He cannot avoid making amends and must apologize eventually. Those who foolishly dispute with Dost the poet cannot help but surrender or else run away. This is another poet named Ustad Badrussaman Badr, and I think, didn't it say it was his brother in this last thing? He's a prolific Pakistani essayist with an MA in English. Along with his brother, Sheikh Abdurrahim Muslim Dost, he spent most of the 1980s publishing magazines that supported rebel fighters against the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan and writing for the cause of Pashtun nationalism. In November 2001, the brothers were arrested by Pakistani intelligence officers who subsequently turned them over to the U.S. military. Badr was returned to Peshawar in 2004 after the military determined that he represented no threat to the United States. With his brother, he recently published a memoir of his time in detention, The Broken Shackles of Guantanamo. And his poem is called Lions in the Cage, and this too is dedicated in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful, a poem written in Camp Delta, Guantanamo, Cuba. We are the heroes of the time. We are the proud youth. We are the hairy lions. We live in the stories now. We live in the epics. We live in the public's heart. We are the shield before the oppressor. Our courage is like a mountain. The pharaoh of our time is restless because of us. The chief of the White Palace, like other sinful chiefs, cannot see our patience. The whirlpool of our tears is moving fast toward him. No one can endure the power of this flood. It mostly happens in these cages that the stars at midnight bring good news, that we will surely succeed, and the world will wait for us, the caravan of Badr. And this poet is named Abdulaziz. Abdulaziz, who wishes not to reveal his last name, had just graduated from university in his native Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, when U.S. forces launched their attack on Afghanistan. He traveled to the region to find his brother and bring him home safely. Soon after Abdulaziz found him, both men were picked up by Northern Alliance forces. After being tortured in an Afghan prison, he was turned over to the U.S. military in early 2002 and eventually sent to Guantanamo along with his brother. Both were classified as enemy combatants. His brother was subsequently released, but Abdulaziz remains in detention. The first one is called I Shall Not Complain. I shall not complain to anyone or expect grace from anyone other than God, so help me God. O Lord, my heart is plagued with troubles. I shall not complain to anyone other than you, even if the seas complain of dryness. My spirit is free in the heavens while my body is overpowered by chains. Praise God who has granted me patience in times of adversity and gratitude in times of gladness. Praise God who placed a garden and an orchard in my bosom, so they will be with me always. Praise God who has granted me faith and made me a Muslim. Praise God, Lord of the world. And the other one is called O Prison Darkness. O prison darkness, pitch your tent. We love the darkness. For after the dark hours of the night, pride's dawn will rise. Let the world with all its bliss fade away so long as we find favor with God. A boy may despair in the face of a problem, but we know God has a design. Even though the bands tighten and seem unbreakable, they will shatter. Those who persist will attain their goal. Those who keep knocking shall gain entry. Oh, crisis, intensify. The morning is about to break forth. This is by Mohammed Al-Gharani, who is a 14-year-old Chadian national raised in Saudi Arabia, who had recently arrived in Pakistan to learn English and to study information technology when he was imprisoned by Pakistani police. They hanged him by his wrists, nearly naked, his feet barely touching the floor, and beat him if he moved. When told he would be transferred to U.S. custody, Gharani was overjoyed, thinking that his torture would end. Under U.S. custody in Kandahar, Afghanistan, however, he was also stripped and beaten. In January 2002, he became one of the first enemy combatants transferred to Guantanamo Bay, where he remains. As many as 29 juveniles, including Gharani, have been detained at Guantanamo in violation of international law. It's called First Poem of My Life, and this one is translated by Flag Miller. Move it cautiously in the land of those who speak no Arabic, even if they gave you oaths bound by oaths. Their aim is to worship petty cash, and for it they break all vows. I came to their land to pursue an education and saw such malice among them. They surrounded the mosque, weapons drawn, as if they were in a field of war. They said to us, come out peacefully and don't utter a single word. Into a transport truck they lifted us, and in shackles of injustice they bound us. For 16 hours we walked, for the entire time we remained in shackles. All of us wanted to evacuate our bowels, but they insisted on denying us. The soldier struck with his boot. He said we were all equally subjects. In the prison's darkness they spread us out. In the cold's bitterness we sat. When the red-faced infidels came to spend their money, never had I seen such tribulation. In a war plane they brought us up, and after a half an hour brought us down. We saw such insults from them, not even the Book of God was protected. Along with their malice, they were foolish, tribulations, then hitting, and imbecility. For they are a people without reasonable minds due to their supply of alcoholic drinks. The greasy arrived in our state of need on the condition that we raise the card with a cross. If you want dignity and protection, then raise the cross for protection. All of us threw the card away, intent that our spirits be redeemed in sacrifice. They carried us afterwards to Cuba because it is an afflicted isle. Out of spite, they showed such impudence. Their war is against Islam and justice. And then the translator says, Greece is a pun on cross, salit and salib in Arabic. And his mind is greasy, suggests that powers of reason are corrupted by sordid thoughts. And the word afflicted comes from another pun with the word Cuba. Cuba in Arabic means afflicted. Mankuba means afflicted. So anyway, that's it. Thank you.
The next reader is Linda Durham, gallery owner and writer.
The first poem I'm going to read is by Shakir Abdulrahim Amir, a Saudi Arabian citizen and a British resident. He's been detained at Guantanamo since 2002. They fight for peace. Peace, they say. Peace of mind. Peace on earth. Peace of what kind? I see them talking, arguing, fighting. What kind of peace are they looking for? Why do they kill? What are they planning? Is it just talk? Why do they argue? Is it so simple to kill? Is this their plan? Yes, of course. They talk, they argue, they kill, they fight for peace. The next poem is Death Poem, and it's written by Juma al-Dosari, and he is a 33-year-old Bahraini national. He's the father of a young daughter, and he has been held at Guantanamo for more than 5 years. He has been held in solitary confinement since the end of 2003, and according to U.S. military, he has tried to kill himself 12 times while in prison. And on one occasion, he was found by his lawyer hanging by his neck and bleeding from a gash in his arm. Death Poem. Take my blood. Take my death shroud and the remnants of my body. Take photographs of my corpse at the grave, lonely. Send them to the world, to the judges, and to the people of conscience. Send them to the principled men and the fair-minded, and let them bear the guilty burden before the world of this innocent soul. Let them bear the burden before their children and before history of this wasted, sinless soul, of this soul which has suffered at the hands of the protectors of peace. Humiliated in the Shackles was written by Sami Al-Haj, and he is a Sudanese national and a journalist, and he was covering the conflict in Afghanistan for an Al Jazeera television station. And he was taken into custody, and he was stripped of his passport and his press card and handed over to U.S. forces in 2002, January. And he was tortured both at Bagram Air Base and Kandahar before he was moved to Guantanamo Bay. The U.S. military alleges that he worked as a financial courier for Chechen rebels and that he had assisted Al-Qaeda. But he has offered the public no evidence in support of these allegations. And he is still at Guantanamo. Humiliated in the Shackles. When I heard pigeons cooing in the trees, hot tears covered my face. When the lark chirped, my thoughts composed a message for my son. Mohammed, I am afflicted. In my despair, I have no one but Allah for comfort. The oppressors are playing with me as they move freely about the world. They ask me to spy on my countrymen, claiming it would be a good deed. They offer me money and land and freedom to go where I please. Their temptations seize my attention like lightning in the sky. But their gift is an evil snake, carrying hypocrisy in its mouth like venom. They have monuments to liberty and freedom of opinion, which is well and good. But I explain to them that architecture is not justice. America, you ride on the backs of orphans and terrorize them daily. Bush, beware. The world recognizes an arrogant liar. To Allah, I direct my grievance and my tears. I am homesick and oppressed. Muhammad, do not forget me. Support the cause of your father, a God-fearing man. I was humiliated in the shackles. How can I now compose verses? How can I now write? After the shackles and the nights and the suffering and the tears, how can I write poetry? My soul is like a roiling sea stirred by anguish, violent with passion. I am a captive, but the crimes are my captors. I am overwhelmed with apprehension. Lord, unite me with my son, Mohammed. Lord, grant success to the righteous. Adnan Farhan Abdul Latif wrote the hunger strike poem. He's a 27-year-old Yemeni from a family of modest means. He was the victim of a 1994 accident that resulted in very serious head injuries, and he spent much of the rest of the decade seeking affordable medical treatment in Jordan, in Afghanistan, and in Pakistan. And after 9/11 attacks, he was taken into custody by Pakistani forces and turned over to the United States for a $5,000 bounty. He was eventually flown to Guantanamo and kept for a time in an open-air kennel, exposed to the elements, causing further deterioration of his health. Latif has periodically joined other detainees in hunger strikes. Hunger strike poem. They are criminals, increasing their crimes. They are criminals, claiming to be peace-loving. They are criminals torturing the hunger strikers. They are artists of torture. They are artists of pain and fatigue. They are artists of insults and humiliation. They are faithless, traitors, and cowards. They have surpassed devils with their criminal acts. They do not respect the law. They do not respect men. They do not spare the elderly. They do not spare the baby-toothed child. They leave us in prison for years, uncharged, because we are Muslims. Where is the world to save us from torture? Where is the world to save us from the fire and sadness? Where is the world to save the hunger strikers? But we are content on the side of justice and right, worshiping the Almighty. And our motto on this island is Salam. I'd like to say that it's an honor for me to be part of this evening, that like most of you, like all of you, I stand for peace. I stand for the First Amendment. I leave in a few days for Burma, where I will stand for the people there. Thank you.
I've often noticed a certain absurd verbal thing that people do. When they're confronted with some awful current event, they say, "How can this be happening in 2007? Or fill in whatever the current year is. I've heard this construction since I was a little kid. The underlying assumption seems to be that bad things can't happen in the present, but only in history. That in the present we are somehow civilized. I suspect people have always said this. Like, how can this be happening in 1848, for goodness sake? In Nazi Germany, in Stalin's Soviet Union, in Pinochet's Chile, the majority of people were just living their lives, falling in love, complaining about their aches and pains, taking care of their children, with varying degrees of awareness of the camps, the gulags, that disappeared. And, of course, it's the same here. We're going about our daily lives and thinking about the things that are most important and closest to us. You don't necessarily put yourself in the position of the people. You don't even think about the fact that they're suffering in the present tense. There are people in Guantanamo now, today, as we're here reading poetry. They're going through physical sensations that we can't even imagine, sitting in this nice room now, dressed in clothing that's appropriate for the weather, you know, knowing that there's food at home to eat when we get home, or maybe we ate before we get here. This collection of poems, The Detainees Speak, really brought me into a contemplation of that physical experience that's connected to words like detention, torture, abuse, humiliation, solitary confinement, sensory deprivation, sleep deprivation. We can talk about suspension of habeas corpus. We can rail against Cheney and Bush and Rumsfeld and Gonzalez, and all those things are true. But when we read these poems, or when I read these poems, I found something else that was happening. I felt that I was going into myself in a certain way, in a different way. And I realized that what is going on in Guantanamo is so much about the human body. It's about preventing people from using their bodies the way they want to use them, to eat, to nourish themselves, to love, to express affection, to sleep and to dream, to walk around, to run freely, to stay clean, to live within the boundaries of modesty that their character or their culture requires. So I find myself trying to imagine, and I ask all of you to imagine, that you're the man in the cell with the lights on all night and loud, horrible music blaring in your ears. And imagine that you were in the wrong place at the wrong time, or that you annoyed your neighbor and the neighbor sold you for a reward, or that you gave a contribution to an organization that was on the wrong list. Imagine that you are in a very, very small room and they turn the heat up very, very hot and you're suffocating and you can't get out. And then suddenly it's so cold that you can't bear it. It's unbearably cold and you're shivering and you don't have cloth to cover you. And imagine that all the while that this is happening, you're being interrogated by hostile foreigners whose language you don't speak. They're kicking you, they're beating you, you're blindfolded, they're questioning you while holding a gun to your head. They're questioning you over and over and over again. And then you get sick, and you're left alone, and you're in pain, and you're in fever, and you have no medicine and no doctor. And this is what's happening in Guantanamo, and this is what's happening right now, as we're here in this lovely room. When you complain about it, you get locked in a room, you go to solitary confinement for 6 months, the seasons change, you can't get out, you can't do anything. And I mean, I can't really imagine it. I've never experienced anything like that in my life. It's even hard to remember, I think, pain that we have experienced once it's over. You know, you get over it and you feel better and you don't even think about it. But I think we can imagine the fear and loneliness and helplessness and humiliation that we've probably all felt to a greater or lesser extent in our lives as children or as adults. And probably the very worst thing that we've ever known in our lives, the people here in this room, is just a faint shadow of what these people in Guantanamo are going through right now. So I wonder if we were there, whether any of us would be saying, well, this can't be happening. This is 2007. One way we can block it out is think, well, those are different people, or it's very far away, or they're not like us. Here's a paragraph from the New York Times, February 4th, 2006. The Army Corps of Engineers has awarded a contract worth up to $385 million for building temporary immigration detention centers to Kellogg Brown and Root, the Halliburton subsidiary. KBR would build centers for the Homeland Security Department for an unexpected influx of immigrants to house people in the event of a natural disaster, or for new programs that require additional detention space. New programs that require additional detention space. Those are in the United States, these detention centers. Nobody knows anything about them. All the prisoners in Guantanamo are innocent by definition until they're found guilty. Reading this book confirmed my sense that a lot of them actually are innocent through and through. You've heard some of the biographies that Lucy and Linda have read. One of the men whose poem is in the book is worked for a charity that is alleged to have ties to Al-Qaeda. That's a word to watch for, like links to terrorist organizations. I was thinking about the waitress serving lasagna to the mafia boss. You know, she has links to the mob. Some of the men were turned over to the American military, as you've heard, by bounty hunters who received thousands of dollars for each supposed terrorist they came up with. They're teachers with advanced degrees, some of these men. They're journalists, poets, students, teenagers, businessmen. Many of them are the parents of young children, and many of them have tried to kill themselves. I find myself wondering, I don't like to think about it, but how long it would take for me to reach that moment of total despair, the total disappearance of hope. And I suspect that they probably lasted a lot longer than I would have. I was having a very nice dinner the other night with a kind of amiable country club Republican who, his blood was full of martinis, and he was saying, "The Muslims are trying to take over the world." That's a narrative from which this man is never going to deviate. He's got reinforcement in his world. That's how it is in the world in which he lives. That's the narrative. And, you know, he doesn't know other narratives. He doesn't know that, first of all, he's never read and will probably never read the poems in this book, the poems that you've been hearing tonight. He's never heard of a Muslim intellectual or a Muslim moderate, and he can't probably imagine a middle-class Muslim going to a restaurant or going to an office in the morning. And I think that it's our job as community members to spread a different narrative. I work in public radio, so it's my job to spread a different narrative. I work for KSFR, Santa Fe's community public radio station, and that is the one place where you do hear honest and thoughtful criticism of what's going on in the system under which we're living. It's a funny institution. It's robust and it's very fragile at the same time. It's robust in its honesty and its courage, but it's also fragile economically, and it requires the support of community members, economic support and every kind of support, because we operate, KSFR and all these other stations really operate outside the world of corporate sponsorship. We're fortunate that at this point we're not being sent to the Gulag or to the Halliburton centers or being disappeared for expressing dissent. We have the right to express dissent. Public radio is the vehicle for that right. So I encourage people to give it their individual support. One thing that should be noted about this edition of Poems from Guantanamo, which is that it was translated by military translators. A lot of the originals, if not all of them, are locked up. The Arabic original is locked up for national security reasons. So as you listen to the poems, be sure to listen for what's not said. A lot of the poems that were written were taken away from the people who wrote them. They're not in this book. A lot of the poems were not allowed to be put in this book. So there's a great deal of censorship, and the censorship comprises far more than what has made it into this very slim volume. So the first poem that I'm going to read is by Abdullah Thani Faris al-Anasi, who was a double amputee, having lost both of his legs in a U.S. bombing campaign in Afghanistan while he was employed as a humanitarian aid worker. After his first leg was amputated, he was arrested on his recovery bed by bounty hunters and turned over to the U.S. forces. While in U.S. custody, his second leg was amputated. He's been in Guantanamo since 2002, where he's received inadequate medical care, and at times he's been forced to walk on prosthetics, limbs held together with duct tape. To my father. 2 years have passed in faraway prisons. 2 years my eyes untouched by coal. 2 years my heart sending out messages to the homes where family dwells, where lavender cotton sprouts for grazing herds that leave well-fed. Oh, Flaji, explain to those who visit our home how I used to live. I know your thoughts are swirled as in a whirlwind when you hear the voice of my anguished soul. Send sweet peace and greetings to Boumer. Kiss him on the forehead, for he is my father. Fate has divided us like the parting of a parent from a newborn. Oh, Father, this is a prison of injustice. Its iniquity makes the mountains weep. I have committed no crime, and I am guilty of no offense. Curved claws have I, but I have been sold like a fattened sheep. I have no fellows but the truth. They told me to confess, but I am guiltless. My deeds are all honorable and need no apology. They tempted me to turn away from the lofty summit of integrity, to exchange this cage for a pleasant life. By God, if they were to bind my body in chains, if all Arabs were to sell their faith, I would not sell mine. I have composed these lines for the day when your children have grown old. O God, who governs creation with providence, who is one, singular, and self-subsisting, who brings comfort and happy tidings, whom we worship, grant serenity to a heart that beats with oppression and release this prisoner from the tight bonds of confinement. The next poem is by Osama Abu Kabir. He's a Jordanian water truck driver who worked for the municipality of Greater Amman. After joining an Islamic missionary organization called the Jamaat al-Tablighi, he traveled to Afghanistan, where he was detained by anti-Taliban forces and handed over to the U.S. military. One of the justifications offered for his continued detention is that he was captured while wearing a Casio digital watch, a brand supposedly favored by members of Al-Qaeda because some of the models may be used as bomb detonators. Kabir remains in Guantanamo. He's there right now. Is it true? Is it true that the grass grows again after rain? Is it true that flowers will rise up in the spring? Is it true that birds will migrate home again? Is it true that salmon swim back up their streams? It is true. This is true. These are all miracles. But is it true that one day we'll leave Guantanamo Bay? Is it true that one day we'll go back to our homes? I sail in my dreams. I am dreaming of home. To be with my children, each one part of me. To be with my wife and the ones that I love. To be with my parents, my world's tenderest hearts. I dream to be home, to be free from this cage. But do you hear me, O Judge? Do you hear me at all? We are innocent here. We've committed no crime. Set me free. Set us free. If anywhere still, justice and compassion remain in this world. The next two poems are by Abdullah Majid al-Nu'aymi, and the subtitle under his name is The Captive of Dignity. He's a 24-year-old citizen of Bahrain who attended Old Dominion University in Virginia, but returned home after a year, heartbroken over breaking up with his girlfriend. Shortly after the beginning of his electrical engineering studies in the United Arab Emirates in 2001, Nu'aymi traveled to Afghanistan to find a family member who had not been heard from in some time. After an unsuccessful search, he made his way to the Pakistani border and asked to be taken to the Bahrain embassy. Instead, Pakistani authorities turned him over to the U.S. military. He was detained in Kandahar, Afghanistan, for about 5 months before being transferred to Guantanamo, and he was released from the prison camp in November 2005. I write my hidden longing. I write my hidden longing. I tried to defend him with my eyes, but I looked around and was cornered. Destiny had found me. My rib is broken, and I can find no one to heal me. My body is frail, and I can see no relief ahead. For before me is a tumultuous sea. The land continues to call me, but I am sailing in my thoughts. The impious have murdered me in my home. I wish someone would comfort me. At night I taste bile and cannot sleep. The tears of someone else's longing are affecting me. My chest cannot take the vastness of emotion. The book of God consoles me and dulls the pain I have suffered. The book of God assuages my misery, even though they declared war against it. I stand tall and smile in the face of misery. I'm satisfied. O Father, tell the tearful one, do not forget me as I do not forget you. He will understand my condition. And when you pass by life's familiar objects, the Bedouin rugs, the bound branches, the flight of pigeons, remember me. I salute the brothers and pray peace to those who remain faithful. I say hello to Shweiman and to everyone whom I love and to everyone who misses me. Remember, pray to God for those whom I love. Maybe God, with his kindness, will have mercy on me. This is a poem called My Heart Was Wounded by the Strangeness, and the author wrote a two-paragraph introduction to it. He says, This is a poem that I have written about my brother and friend, Salman al-Khalifa, at the Guantanamo prison after a long separation between us. The Americans were keen on keeping us apart. Four months later, he sent verbal greetings with his brothers, in which he said, "May peace, God's mercy, and blessings be upon you. I miss you a great deal, and I'm trying to write a poem for you. I felt guilty about this. Will he write a poem for me when he's no poet, while I, who claim to be a poet, have written nothing for him?" I then said, "If he writes a poem for me before I write one for him, I deserve to be scoffed at until the day of judgment." So I set out to write, but I could not concentrate on the poem. I put poetry writing aside and turned to memorizing the Quran. But I could not concentrate on the Quran because my mind was occupied with the poem. With my mind divided, time began to pass, and then I was inspired. My heart was wounded by the strangeness. Now poetry has rolled up his sleeves, showing a long arm. Time passes. The hands of the clock deceive us. Time is precious and the minutes are limited. Do not blame the poet who comes to your land, inspired, arranging rhymes. O brother, who need not be named, I send you my gift of greetings. I send heavily falling rains to quench your thirst and show my gratitude. My poem will comfort you and ease your burdens. If you blame yourself, my poem will appease you. My mind is not heavy with animosity. I will be satisfied once you are free, and I will embrace you. There is nothing, brother, like a mild, agreeable temper. I will offer advice out of pure cordiality, advice from one who has experienced the impossible. You will not gain everything that your soul desires. Some things will come to you, but others will not. Forget what people say and be satisfied with who you are. Patience, the bony animal, will lead you to meat. Be generous to others, brother, and leave behind your avaricious spirit. If your brother has hurt you, recall his good deeds and the pain will go away. Hide the sadness of your heart as in a valley. Make it your captive. If released, it will make you suffer. No matter how long our separation lasts, I will not forget you. You are precious and grow more precious. He who has companions like you will never lose dignity. I hope that your rights will always be cheerful. May the Lord compensate you for what you have lost. I ask the Merciful One to guide you to peace. May the Lord keep you fast on the path of virtue. I conclude my poem by invoking prayers and blessings on the Messenger of Allah, Ahmed, His Chosen One. And the last poem is by Siddiq Turkestani. He is a 33-year-old ethnic Uyghur raised in Saudi Arabia. In 1997, while traveling in Afghanistan, he was abducted by members of Al-Qaeda and tortured until he, quote, confessed, unquote, to plotting to kill Osama bin Laden. He was imprisoned by the Taliban at Kandahar until 2001 when U.S. intelligence personnel visited the jail. He told them his story and was promised a quick release. Instead, he was eventually sent to Guantanamo and held for 4 years on accusations that included being associated with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. The military determined that he was not an enemy combatant in January 2005, and he was released from Guantanamo nearly 6 months later. Even if the pain. Even if the pain of the wound increases, there must be a remedy to treat it. Even if the days in prison endure, there must be a day when we will get out. Thank you.